welcome in to a special edition of Gateway to Baseball, having a Monday show, and the first one of the 2017 baseball season. Baseball is back, and we're all happy and already worked up because it's baseball. That's what it does for us. I'm Daniel Shoptaw. You'll find me at C70 and on the Cardinal Conclave, C70 at the bat. With me is Tara Wellman, poet laureate of the UCB. You'll find her at Bird Seeds and Bird Tales, and mainly over there on the YouTube channel. Tara, we had a game last night. It was an interesting, exciting, infuriating game. So obviously baseball's back, right?
Exactly. You know, I realized very quickly that the stress level goes dramatically up in my life with baseball back. But apparently I like the rush because I'm always excited for it the beginning of the year. And then inevitably before that first game is over, I'm questioning my own sanity, but it's back and we all love it.
That's right. That's right. So let's kind of talk about the good part of yesterday's game. And if there are a couple of really good parts, but I think if you're going to start talking about the good, it's Carlos Martinez. Carlos Martinez started the game yesterday and proved why he is the opening day starter. 7.1 scoreless innings, 10 strikeouts. And really looked like almost a more mature pitcher than we saw even at the end of last year. It seems like this offseason he just grew and really kind of something may have clicked.
Yeah, you know, we talked even last year about Carlos taking the ace role kind of by default because of Adam Wainwright's struggles. This year I don't think it's going to be by default. If yesterday was any indication, what we're seeing is Carlos Martinez really taking on the responsibility of being the top pitcher for this team and not being overwhelmed by that, not trying too hard by that like we've seen at times. He's always wanted to be the pitcher that had the ball in the biggest moments of the game, but we sometimes saw him maybe just try a little too hard or try to do a little too much. There was none of that yesterday. He was calm and collected and in control from the very first pitch, despite what the ESPN commentators might have tried to say. I think it was quite obvious that he and Yadi were on the same page from pitch one all the way through. You know, even that eighth inning where he went out and let a couple of guys on base. I mean, it was hard to ask for any more than we saw from him. He used his wide range of pitches as well as I've ever seen him do. He was mixing it up, but not in a way that caused him to lose any of that control. I think in the past, sometimes we've seen him when he's trying to mix in some of those off-speed pitches or change up location, and then, you know, he reaches back for a little bit more on that fastball. It can get out of control, but it didn't yesterday. It was a thing of beauty from start to finish, and it made me, I didn't know I could be more excited about watching Carlos Martinez this year, but I think I am after last night.
Yeah, Carlos allowed, I'm a little bit disagree. I think he might have been a little amped in the first inning. Like I said, he gave up a couple of hits there. Not much. I mean, definitely not what we see out of Carlos a lot of times. But then he obviously settled in well, and he gave up two hits in his last frame. And in between, he only gave up two. I think at one time he set down 10 in a row. And that's the kind of pitching that we didn't see last year on a regular basis. I mean, obviously there were games here and there. Now, I'm not just talking about Carlos Martinez. I'm talking about the whole staff. But it kind of makes you come back to those games in 2015 where it was almost – every night the starter was taking a shutout into the sixth or the seventh. And that's a good thing. Definitely a good thing. We also saw an interesting, an interesting lineup. I don't think it was too dramatic, but it was a little strange to see, some people batting where they were. I do not believe, however, that Mr. Grichuk will be batting eighth, tomorrow night.
You know, we said that a lot about Diaz last year. He stuck in that eighth spot for a long time.
This is true. You know, Grichuk needs to, you know, build up that, get confident down there in that eighth
right.
spot.
Right.
Grichuk 2-for-4, two run home run in the eighth that looked to seal the game, and then a walk off. It was a single. It probably could have been more than that if it necessary, to win the game in the ninth. You know, he also drew a walk in that game. Grichuk, especially, I think he had some really good at-bats. And maybe, kind of like Carlos Martinez, had a little bit more control than we were expecting.
Yeah, for sure. I think as impressive as the home run to me, in fact, possibly even more impressive, with just the disciplined approach at the plate last night, which has really been the knock on Garcia from the beginning. We've known about his power. We've known about the bat speed and all of those things that make him such a great hitter when he makes contact, but he's also been a little bit too aggressive at times. He's really shown through most of his career so far that there are some holes in his swing. Last night we saw a very controlled, very disciplined approach, and in fact there was one at bat that maybe he was not quite aggressive enough with Carlos Martinez hitting behind him, but he took a walk there, and in most circumstances, you're gonna, be quite grateful for that. I think there were, a few people that would have liked him to take a couple of swings in that at bat and, maybe not bring Carlos Martinez up to the plate with two outs and the bases loaded, but, his approach was something that I think was as significant from that game as anything else was, because it shows a lot of growth, a lot of improvement from a guy that the Cardinals, really need to step up. I think we saw that starting to happen at the end of last year when they finally just left him alone and let him be in the outfield defensively, and also, you know, just kept running him out there, to get those everyday at bats. And whatever he did in the offseason and this spring, I know it's one game, and it's hard to gauge what he's going to be this season based on one game, but it was very evident that there were improvements that were made from last season, and it ended up with the result of him being the hero of the game twice. So whatever he did, it's working for him.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that we'll dismiss 6 weeks of stats from spring training, saying it's just spring training, it doesn't matter, but, you know, one game. Well, you know, we can extrapolate 162 from here.
Right.
Obviously, Chris Bryant is going to strike out, you know, about 500 times this year and be the worst guy to ever follow up an MVP season. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and I think even, you know, even the strikeout that Grichuk had yesterday, it wasn't a free swinging strikeout. He worked the count, if I remember right, it was 3-2, fouled off some pitches,
yeah,
and then wound up taking a close one on the line that could have, probably should have swung at, but from what I remember, it was, you know, it wasn't a terrible pitch, to take. And so, again, that's interesting, and I think that changes a lot of the dynamic of this offense if that's what we get out of Grichuk this year. You know, we saw, you know, Dexter Fowler get a hit. We saw Alamedes Diaz steal two bases, which is just, you know, when they said they were going to do something about pitching or base stealing this year, they meant they'd, you know, run on John Lester finally. You know, we saw some interesting things. I think it was all the whole, you know, Yadier Molina comes in. Two hits, two walks, you know, and $60 million richer, which we'll get to that hopefully in a little bit. All in all, there were some highlights, but, you know, they really almost got overshadowed by the ninth inning when O gives up a 3-run home run. Now we talked a little bit beforehand. Let's kind of talk about, as I wrote this morning, there were decision points that Mike Matheny had last night, and I've been interested, like I said, I've been surprised to see as many people defending as Mike Matheny as have been doing so. Not that they're wrong, I'm just surprised that anybody defends Mike Matheny. Anytime anybody on Mike Matheny gets defended in Cardinal Twitter, I kind of look a little bit like, what's going on here? Let's talk about the sixth inning. Like you said, Randall Grichuk draws the walk, loads the bases, brings up Carlos Martinez, who had some options, actually had a pretty good at-bat, but then wound up hitting the ball a little too hard, double play, they get out of it. You had the option there to let Carlos Martinez not swing at all and just let Dexter Fowler try to do it with two outs. You also had the option to pinch hit for Martinez there. He pitched six innings. It was 85 pitches. I think a lot of people wanted to see Matt Adams come in and pinch hit there. Where were you on that?
You know, this was a situation that I could have seen handled in a number of different ways that I think were defensible. I was not really opposed to letting Carlos hit there. Of any of the starting pitchers that could have been left in the game in that moment, I think Carlos is really the only one that, Adam Wainwright probably, would have been the other one that swings the bat well enough that you could have made an argument for it. But Carlos is a guy that's not going to go up there and give up an easy at bat. I mean, he's going to make the pitcher work for it, and he did. And more times, it seems, than not, when Carlos goes up there and takes seven or eight pitches, he wins that battle, and he didn't last night. I would not have been opposed to him going up there and taking three strikes and sitting back down and letting Dexter Fowler have a go at it. I think of any of the options with the way Carlos was dealing at that point, that might have been the one that I preferred. But if you're only going to give Carlos, you know, one more inning on the mound anyway, I can definitely see where a pinch hitter there would have given them the option to have avoided some of the late game theatrics, assuming that Matt Adams came in and was able to do something there, which again, you don't want to completely discredit the spring training that he ended up creating for himself, but there's a lot of precedent, in the regular season side of things that, I think gives a lot of people pause in maybe trusting him in that moment. At this point in the season either. But like I said, there were a number of ways that could have gone. I would have loved to, I literally said almost as Carlos Martinez swung the bat and it turned into a too hard grounder for the, for the out there, I was watching with my dad and I said, literally the only thing he cannot do is put the ball on the ground. Anything else, I don't care. he did the one thing that was the wrong result in that situation. And I guess to some degree you take that chance with a guy who's pitching as well as he is at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I felt like he had more in the tank, and I hate to take out a guy that's, you know, it felt like that was just playing into the Cubs' hands to some degree to get him out of the game. Now, again, I get the point of idea of going for the jugular, and, you know, if Matt Adams comes in and gets a double, then it looks great. But if Matt Adams comes in and strikes out, you know, that Dexter Fowler has to get in and run with a hit, with two outs. If he doesn't do it, it's a 1-0 game and you've turned it over to your bullpen, which apparently Mike Matheny has issues with. So,
already.
Yes, already. even though nobody's actually pitched. So I don't know. I mean, my gut feeling right then, immediate reaction was he's got a hit. I get that people wanted to pinch hit him for there. And if he had been pinch hit for there, I think it's a legitimate call.
Right.
The next decision point is the one I think that you and I both agree is a little bit more egregious, and that is after seven innings, Carlos Martinez, who had, you know, you'd had Brett Cecil warming up because he'd given up a hit at the bottom of the seventh, or in the like two outs in the seventh, he'd given up a hit, gets through the seventh, but he's at 97 pitches. He's not going to go much farther. And yet, Mike Matheny runs him out there for the eighth instead of starting it with a Brett Cecil or even a Matt Bowman or somebody like that. You've got a one-run lead. I get that. But, you know, Martinez isn't going very far. It seemed like that's the time to make the move. And like you said, start an inning fresh.
I would argue that you have just a one-run lead. I mean, there's not, you can't have a long leash with Carlos at almost 100 pitches. And why would you put your bullpen in a position to come in and try to clean up a mess rather than just start the inning fresh and do their job? The kicker for me though on this whole thing is that this is literally the only game of the year that you have your entire bullpen at your disposal. No one is more rested than they are in that game. And, you know, Brett Cecil is your big offseason signing as far as the pitching side of things is concerned. And I don't know. I understand bringing in your best pitcher to face the heart of the order. I get that. And I guess my real issue, like you said, isn't necessarily with who came in at that point. It was when they came in. I didn't think there was any reason for Carlos to go out and start the eighth inning after the way that he finished the seventh and the pitch count and the guys that were ready in the bullpen. It just, it didn't make sense to try to push it at that point in a one-run game when there were guys ready in the bullpen with, their job description basically laying out in front of everyone. this is what those guys are there for. But to bring them in after Carlos gave up a couple of hits. You could feel it coming, as we so often do with these bullpen decisions that Mike Matheny makes. It seems as if everyone in the ballpark and everyone watching at home can see what's about to happen when he doesn't. So it just, you know, there are a lot of people who were applauding bringing in Sungwan Oh in that scenario, and I get that. I just don't think that he should have had to come in with runners at first and second. I think that starting the inning clean would have given everyone a better chance at coming out of that unscathed, which he did, but he had to throw a lot of extra pitches to do it.
Yeah, and then those pitches wound up costing the Cardinals in the ninth. It's ironic a little bit, because one of the things that we have always complained about with Mike Matheny is that he is so rigid in his bullpen usage. And in, I think, years, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, he would have automatically brought in Kevin Segrist because he's the eighth inning guy, whether he needed him or not, and then brought in O in the ninth because, you know, whatever, you know, even if it is a 10-run lead. It's almost like he wanted to, you know, break out and be creative because Joe Maddon was in the other dugout, and Joe Maddon gets this reputation of being this creative guy, that Mike wanted to be, you know, show that he could do it too. I'm just a little surprised. And again, I get bringing in O for the, after the two, you know, when two gone, one out, but I also think there were a lot of left-handed bats up there. That's, you know, you got Brett Cecil to get Anthony Rizzo out, to get Kyle Schwarber out. This is the guy, I mean, this is seriously what you're thinking about. These are, I mean, if anybody in the whole division you want them to get out are those two guys, and you're not already giving him a chance to do that. You could argue, but it'd been way too creative. And no manager, I'm not even going to blame Mike Matheny on this, no manager would do this, but you could bring your closer in for two outs in the eighth and then, you know, let somebody else handle the ninth after, you know, hopefully the worst of it is over. We do a lot of talking about what Mike Matheny did. We talk a lot about what Sungwan Oh, you know, kind of did. But if Matt Carpenter just goes and fields the ball and touches first base, we're probably not having this discussion. It looks like, you know, I think Matt's inexperience at first really cost him last night.
Yeah, it definitely showed, and I don't think that's a great thing to have in the very first game of the season. Those are the moments that he has to be decisive. He has to know where he's going. And he started to make the wrong choice and then couldn't really recover from there. And it ended up costing the Cardinals in the moment. Fortunately, Randall Grichuk, hero of the day, came through again. You're right. It looks on the surface like a bullpen decision that went wrong, when in reality it was that patented "we're gonna play better defense" philosophy that didn't work out so well in game one. I do have to say, if Mike really wanted to impress Joe Maddon, he would have let Sungwan Oh pitch the eighth, then put him in left field for the first two outs of the ninth, and then brought him back to the mound to get the last out, because that would have been, if we're playing What Would Joe Maddon Do, it might have been that. So, creative is one thing, but, using your creativity wisely is maybe the next step of the developmental process for Mike Matheny.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, you know, Sungwan Oh's, you know, can't be that much worse than Matt Adams out there, right? So
there you go.
You know, just
we're on our way.
That's right. We're working it out. Johnny Peralta did not look very well last night. He did all right. In fact, he had a nice play at third at one point in time, but three strikeouts to start the game. Again, as we said, you would think this would be the last time they put him at cleanup, especially given the results. But this is Mike Matheny, and this is, you know, lineups are, you know, made to be put in stone. It was a little disappointing, I think, after a little bit of a stronger season, stronger spring, to see Peralta start off like that.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those decisions that I don't know that I was necessarily defending, but I wasn't as upset about as I had expected to be. Based on the end of spring training for Peralta, he seemed to be on a little bit of a roll, and while Stephen Piscotty has been the opposite of that, he's been struggling, it sort of made sense to try to run with the hot hand until Piscotty sort of regains his footing and then flip those guys back around. So I wasn't super concerned or upset about it before the game. I think after strikeout number two with runners in scoring position, I was done playing that experiment. I think that, you know, just about anybody else in the lineup last night would have been a better bet hitting fourth than what we saw out of Peralta. And it's, you know, I've never been real high on Peralta just from what we've seen from him. And I know that there are people who would use a number of different statistics to refute that. But I think that, particularly on a team when you're trying to find a way to get Jed Jerko and Colton Wong in the lineup, Peralta gives you some options there, and his at-bats last night certainly didn't do him any favors. At least you would think they didn't, but as you said, we've seen in the past guys that that struggled for weeks on end maintain their spot in the lineup when it made absolutely no sense for the good of the team. So there's reason to expect to see Peralta's name penciled in at fourth again on Tuesday. I would like to think that Piscotty will take over that position once he, you know, gets back in the swing of things. But, you know, you just never know with these lineups, man.
Well, and again, I mean, as much as we say that, we'd also just said you can't draw a whole lot of, you know, conclusions from one game. I mean,
it's true.
You know,
it's true.
Again, if you did that, Chris Bryant's going to hit eighth tomorrow night for Joe Maddon. So, you know, I get, you know, if Peralta's still there tomorrow, then I don't think it's a huge deal. If Peralta has these kind of games all week long and they don't move him, then I think we get into a little bit more of a of an issue of what in the heck is Mike doing. But yeah, on the whole, you know, if nothing else, no matter all the drama, all the excitement, the Cardinals won, the Cubs lost, the Cardinals are in first place, the Cubs are now tied with the rest of the National League Central in last place. If at least right, I hope this isn't the high point of the season, but it's pretty nice right now.
It's a good way to get the season started, especially, you know, I say this a lot, but I live in Cubs territory for the most part. There's a little bit of a divide, but especially now, there's a lot more Cubs fans than there used to be. But I hear about it every opportunity they get, and last night was one moment in time where I could. They were silenced for a little bit as far as the World Series talk goes, which, to be fair, they've had to deal with a lot of that from Cardinals fans in the area over the years. So they had their moment, but that moment is just about over. And for the briefest of celebrations, I got to just not be bothered by all the Cubs fans around me for a moment. So it was a good way to start the season. And, you know, it's the Cardinals haven't had the greatest level of success on Sunday Night Baseball in the last few years. So to win a game like that on national TV was maybe a good way to start the year in a number of other ways as well. Although, you know, I think the narrative is going to be pretty much the same no matter what the Cardinals do at this point.
So, although the Cardinals and Cubs have had some very interesting Sunday Night Baseball games, I can think of.
True, true.
Some really interesting ones that they've had that they've won in the ninth or whatever. So maybe that's just part of the deal. All right, so that pretty much, I mean, hey, we spent a whole show talking about one game. Imagine what we're going to do next week when we have a whole bunch of games. Before we get out of here, though, the Cardinals seem to be making a habit this week of having 1 o'clock press conferences to announce extensions. I'm hoping that, you know, mine is tomorrow. They haven't let me know yet. But Yadier Molina was Sunday, the deal that all of us had been talking about for quite some time, a 3-year deal that kicks in next year, $60 million. And then, kind of out of the blue, Stephen Piscotty gets a 6-year extension. I didn't look. I assume it takes place of this year, going forward. Has an option for a 7th year. I think $33.5 million, not counting the option year. Let's start with Yachty. Again, we've talked a lot about Yachty's extension and stuff, but I think it's just really good to have that down and at a price that, while expensive, seemed to be about what we expected.
Yeah, I think that, there could have been a lot of ways that that number went up, that Yachty had a great year and forced the issue, or he did venture into free agency, and just the bidding war drove that price up for one of the best catchers in the game. So to get him locked in at a number that wasn't outrageous, I think it's great. I think that it does for Cardinals fans what, and I know there's been a lot of comparison to the Albert Pujols contract negotiations, and I guess it's because there are very few, quote, legacy players that the Cardinals have had the opportunity to lock down in recent history. I think when they signed Adam Wainwright to an extension, there was a similar relief. And the superstar players that we often complain about not staying in St. Louis or not coming to St. Louis are the ones that Mo sometimes lets get away for the good of the business side of the game most often. But this was one that it felt like needed to happen for a number of different reasons. And I'm just glad that they went ahead and got it done and we didn't have to to have this conversation for the entirety of the season and likely most of the off season while we waited for something to happen there either. So it's nice to have it done. It's great to see the reaction to Yachty, which is always amazing. But last night, even more so because of the announcement of the deal, and hopefully now he can not be bothered by it and just continue to play the way that he did, starting with the World Baseball Classic and continued through the last couple of weeks of spring and then even last night as well.
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, I had the fear that Yachty would, you know, have this emotional high from playing with Puerto Rico and come in and hit a bit of a crash, as he started the season. But so far, that seems more of the fact that it's just rejuvenated him. He played well down the stretch in spring, and then he started off well yesterday. And don't have any idea what the season will hold for Yachty, but, it seems that maybe we've started to write him off a little too early. But he's a 35-year-old catcher with like almost 1,200 or maybe almost 1,300 innings on his knees.
Yeah.
It's not surprising that we would be hesitant to think that last year's surge was going to be something more than an aberration, but it seems like maybe there's a chance at least for another productive year out of Yachty this year, if nothing else. And again, there is a point, and Chase Woodruff made this point a little bit on one of his podcasts recently. There's gotta be a point where you're a fan and not a general manager. You know, I think that's, we have gotten to the point a lot of people have where they focus more about whether it's a good financial deal, whether it's, you know, something that, you know, should be good for the team, whatever. And they don't necessarily look at, you know, I want to watch this player for the next 3 years, whether it's not a good deal for the team or not, he's there and, you know, he's locked in. And so that's good. You know, they'll talk about his statue soon. I mean, they always, you know, they haven't been any statues in a while.
We already have it figured out.
This
so
is true.
They can just come listen to this show and then pick up the phone and we can tell them exactly where it needs to go.
That's right. Cause like we said, we're going to put Yachty one spot and then, Adam Wainwright 60 feet, 6 inches away.
Exactly.
And I think, of course, that reminds me of the old joke that Tim McCarver used to say about how he was going to be buried 60 feet, 6 inches away from Steve Holmes. So, something of that nature. But anyway, you know, we haven't had any statues put up in a while, but it feels like by the end of this deal, that's going to change. And again, you know, everybody says this is you know, keeps Yachty as a Cardinal for his career. I guess there's no telling, you know, Yachty could play for a few more years after that. And I think that this would probably do it, or at least even if you needed another year, I think the Cardinals would give him another one as some sort of, you know, retirement gift type of thing. But it does seem like Yachty's going to be his only another, and a guy, like they said, if he plays the whole year, whole length of his career contract, he will be right behind Stan Musial, and I think either tied with Gibson or maybe a little behind, as Cardinals that have played the longest with only the Cardinals. So that's not bad company to be in.
Pretty decent names there to be beside in the history books, for
sure.
I
think so. And then he'll probably get his number out there with theirs as well. So, Then, like I said, then we got Stephen Piscotty today. It kind of fits the mold, as some have pointed out, of the Alan Craig deal, the Colton Wong deal, the Matt Carpenter deal, signing these guys a little before arbitration, you know, kind of buying out, which should have bought out all of Piscotty's arbitration years and probably a year or so of free agency as well. It's an interesting gamble, though, on a guy that has only had one full season and had a couple of, you know, the last couple of months were definitely not to the standard that the first little bit had been. Are you a little surprised Mo went ahead and pulled the trigger here?
Yeah, you know, we talk about Mike Matheny sort of getting stuck in the same patterns over and over again. I think Mo has some similar tendencies as far as the business decisions go, because you're right, we've seen this happen a number of times. And to be completely honest, I would say of the guys you mentioned, Matt Carpenter's really the only one that has worked mm-hmm. according to plan so far. So it is a gamble. It's a risk to buy in on these young guys who are still very much unproven at the big league level. Really what you're investing in is their potential, and that's great, but so many times in this game and really in professional sports as a whole, guys don't live up to that potential throughout the entirety of their career. So it's a gamble, but one that I guess by just the law of averages, at some point, he's got to get one right. So Matt Carpenter seems to have been a pretty good get. I think that everyone who's watched Stephen Piscotty play over the last year and even his time in the minor leagues believes that he's going to be a guy that's worthy of that contract. I think that the timing of it is unexpected because of what we saw from him at the second half of last season and the struggles this spring and coming right after the Yadier Molina deal. There was no real conversation about it, so it was not really on anyone's radar. But, you know, we thought with the Colton Wong contract that maybe it would give him the confidence to back up the playing time. I don't think that Stephen Piscotty rides quite the emotional roller coaster that Colton Wong does, so maybe that'll work out a little bit better this go round. But I love what Piscotty brings to this team. I love the competitor that he is, and I think that he can be a really critical piece of the core moving forward for the Cardinals. And you know, it's a risk, but maybe one that is worth taking at this point in his career.
Yeah, like I said, it's interesting to me that I just haven't myself put Stephen Piscotty in this idea that he's this core player, which this contract pretty much establishes, if not for the money, then at least the length of it. They kind of expect him to be part of some sort of new core, and I think Piscotty is a great complementary player, but I don't know that he's going to be this star player like even Matt Carpenter is. And maybe he will be. I mean, he's got a lot, like I said, a lot of potential and a lot of way to develop. It's hard to draw conclusions from, you know, a year and a half in the big leagues.
I think this is a big year as far as that is concerned. As much as we talk about this being a critical year for Colton Wong and his future with the Cardinals, obviously Stephen Piscotty's future with the team is not in jeopardy, but last season he was the new guy coming in to fill the shoes of Jason Hayward, and I think the season as a whole maybe overshadowed what he did, but he's not a guy that comes in with a lot of flash. He's not the guy that's going to draw the biggest crowd, but he just does things well and subtly makes a difference. But I think that as he develops, as he gains that experience, that he can become that player that I think you sort of put into a lineup because of his, I don't want to say star power, but just the consistency and the ability to not ride the waves of emotions, not get too high, not get too low. That consistency in the middle of a lineup can be just as significant as an Albert Pujols type bat hitting in the third spot. And I think that's the kind of player he can become for this team. But I do think that this year is important for him to begin to show that, especially coming after a big contract like this, to show that there's more than just untapped potential and that the great baseball IQ that he has can translate to production on the field in a consistent way. So that I think if he earns back that cleanup spot, and really establishes himself in that role, that's where the organization sees him going forward. And this is a year where I think he has a perfect opportunity to really lay his claim to that.
By the way, did you know he went to Stanford?
I've heard rumor. I've heard rumor of that.
I mean, you know, I mean,
I hear, probably, you know, rocket science or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably where he gets his baseball IQ from, because, you know, Stanford's a smart school.
Right.
Yeah, I'm interested. And somebody pointed out, I guess that means that they're not going to go after Bryce Harper in a couple of years. which is fine. That means that they can go heavily toward Manny Machado instead.
Right.
And I'm perfectly fine. I keep thinking that, because I really think Manny Machado would look really good in St. Louis.
Anyone who doesn't just isn't paying attention.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm also thinking that there's like 28, 29 other teams that would think that he looks really good in their school.
Well, so, sure.
But,
sure.
You know, I'm pretty sure Tampa Bay's not going to get him. So, okay. So we've gotten past the newness. We've broken the seal on the season. The Cardinals, and as again, they got the chance to play the you know, defending champs, the team that is supposed to win the division, and they come out with a win to start with. I think that's something. They didn't just beat up on the Reds or something. Got two more games with the Cubs this week. They got an evening game tomorrow, an afternoon game on Wednesday before a day off, and then those Reds that I was mentioning this weekend. That's the problem with this first week of baseball. It's just a stop and start and day games, and you don't really get into that rhythm of a 7:05 start every night, do you?
No, you definitely don't. And the day after the opening night game is always the worst, because you just get a taste of it, and then you can watch the other games that are on, but it's not quite the same as that rush of the opening night game, especially when, like we saw last night. So the rest of this week is going to be a good opportunity as far as the division is concerned. I mean, if you can find a way to take the series from the Cubs on the opening week of baseball, that's a great start. Obviously long season. A lot of times you're going to have to play these division rivals, but, getting off on the right foot is definitely, you know, I think, it says as much about, or it does as much for, I don't know that very many people want to put a lot of weight on team morale, but this team has talked a lot about the edge they have coming into the season. Matt Carpenter spoke, quite some detail about the motivation that these guys have individually as well as collectively. And a lot of that has to do with what happened last season. And they want to make amends for that, whether it's their own personal play they're trying to prove or just what they feel they can still do in a division that everyone believes is going to go quietly to the Cubs. And this opening week is a great chance to make a statement to the contrary. Whether it ends up meaning anything in the grand scheme of things or not, this is where you have to get that started.
Yeah, and you know, we saw it last year. A win, you know, one win here could be the difference between going home and going to the playoffs. And you know, again, having a chance, if you do take two out of three at the Cubs, I do think that gives you a nice kick to start the season off. It doesn't mean that it'll last real long, but it does, you know, it does give you that confidence to say, hey, we are, and I think it makes you feel like, hey, this is a new year, this is different, especially if you win some good games like you did last night. This is a different year. We've turned the page, and let's see how successful we can be. So, Tara and I will be back with you back on Sunday nights. We'll probably try this Monday night thing every once in a while if there's a Sunday night baseball game and if we get a chance, but mainly we'll be back on Sunday. Feel free to, again, subscribe to us on iTunes, rate, review us, follow Tara at Tara Wellman, follow me at C70, and tell us what you think of the show. Until next week, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.